This is episode 57 of the Women in Depth podcast. The information found in this podcast is not a substitute for help from a licensed mental health professional. Hi, and welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Lourdes Fiato. I am super excited to share today's conversation with you. My guest is Susan Winter. Susan is a best-selling author and relationship expert specializing in higher thinking for an evolving world. Susan writes, speaks, and coaches on cutting-edge partnership models as well as traditional relationship challenges from a platform that fosters self-esteem and personal empowerment. Today, Susan will be talking to us about her first book, Older Women, Younger Men. This book was an international bestseller written to open the hearts and minds of readers to the validity of this type of age gap love. Today, Susan will talk about why she wrote this book, some of the myths and assumptions about the relationships between older women and younger men, and some of the underlying dynamics and qualities of this relationship. Finally, Susan will share some of the lessons we can learn from this type of relationship. I feel like this dialogue is so important because although there has been progress in accepting more diversity in relationships and individuals, we still have a long way to go. A few episodes ago, actually it was episode 42, Tamara Powell, a psychotherapist from Pensacola, Florida, was on the podcast talking about revisioning relationships, how we need and crave different types of relationships, and about the narrow view of relationship that modern society currently has. I feel like this conversation with Susan is a natural continuation of the conversation with Tamara, focusing specifically on the relationship between an older woman and a younger man, a relationship that fascinates, evokes strong reactions, is considered taboo, pushes the boundaries of what society understands and deems acceptable, and is shrouded in myths and misconceptions. But before we jump into the interview, I have to share some of Susan's background. It's absolutely incredible. She graduated from Indiana University School of Music and has a diverse and rich background as a professional communicator, ranging from opera singer to on-camera anchor. She has a vast media expertise, spending a decade as the on-camera spokeswoman for over 200 Fortune 500 companies, and working as the host and moderator of corporate profiles on Financial News Network, which is now CNBC. She's also been a consultant for the Television Bureau of Advertising, Miramax Films, and in strategic alliances with McGarry Bowen's Fortune 100 clientele. As I mentioned before, she has a vast media expertise, and I'm just going to share some of her credits from her television, magazine and print, and radio repertoire. Susan has been on The Oprah Show, The Today Show several times, ABC, CBS, NBC Evening News, CNN Headline News in ongoing segments, Inside Edition, The Early Show, Good Morning America, and BBC News. Her magazine and print experiences include The New York Times, The London Times, The Washington Post, Cosmopolitan Magazine in the US, UK, and Australia, New York Magazine, Fortune Magazine, People Magazine, and Harper's Bazaar in the US and Australia. Her radio appearances include Playboy Network, CBS News Radio in New York City, 98 FM Dublin in Ireland, W Radio Argentina, Colombia, South America, and The Breakfast Show in Sydney, Australia. Susan's insights as a social commentator has earned her guest status on William F. Buckley's legacy show, Debates Debates, PBS, as well as NPR, National Public Radio. Susan has also authored a second book, Allowing Magnificence, which completely reframes how we view life's challenges, empowering the reader to reconnect with the limitless power they already possess. Susan is currently a contributing writer for The Huffington Post and The Good Men Project. Hi, Susan, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Doctor. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you. As we were just chatting before we started the official recording, I am so looking forward to this conversation with you. I wanted to have you on the podcast to talk about your first book, Older Women, Younger Men, which has been an international bestseller. And I found this fascinating because the relationship of an older woman and a younger man is one that, you know, people are fascinated with. There's a lot of taboo. It evokes a lot of strong feelings. And I think there's a lot of misinformation about it. And so thank you so much for coming onto the podcast today to talk about this.
Oh, absolutely. And you are on the money. There is a lot of myth surrounding this, and it is taboo because of that myth. And I do understand we have been accustomed in our world to associate sexual attraction and the desire for partnership to be amongst the pretty people, you know, the young audience people that you see on TV that are all the pretty vampires and zombies or whatever, but they're all hot and good looking, and who wouldn't want to sleep with them? We don't think of romance for middle-aged people. Even if they are with a same-aged partner, we're sort of finding that repulsive in the United States, although things are changing. So you can imagine coming out with a book in the year 2000 about a loving, committed relationship where all of the women that were researched were at least 10-plus years older than their male live-in partner and or husband. And that was something that people did not understand.
And I think in so many ways, you know, when we don't understand something, we tend to fear it, judge it, condemn it.
Exactly. We make it bad, wrong, dirty. And more than that, we make some furtive agenda behind it, you know. And I do understand you have this image of, you know, formerly in our culture, we had Mrs. Robinson. The only reference that people had at the time was, a cocktail drinking bored married lady trying to pick up, you know, a future son-in-law. So we find this repugnant. And yet at the same time, it is hard for people to understand whenever love has occurred outside of the standard packaging.
Wow. Yes.
When we first had interracial relationships, and there was just a movie recently called Loving, you know, a white man in love with a black woman, that was not a combination that people thought was appropriate. And so therefore something must be wrong. Even in our commercials and print ads today, you will rarely see a black man with a white woman. You'll see a black woman with a white man, but there's something about that whole Mandingo, take our white woman, you know, abuse the man through the woman, the blonde woman. We still are trying to overcome this idea that there has to be some negative agenda, harmful, perverted, or twisted. And when it comes to obviously, same-sex couples had to go through this for years. I remember the gays in the 80s having to, with no place to congregate other than the clubs, being forced out into the docks and piers of Manhattan, which were at the time rotting, just any place to go and collect. And so they were kind of forced into bathhouses and non-structured relationships that didn't validate who they were because society didn't have a valid category for gay love. It was all those dirty people having sex. They're perverts. And, in all that collection, nobody could believe, hey, maybe these two guys love each other. Maybe these two women that are roommates have been, you know, in love with each other since college. So we didn't give them a place to validate their relationship. And so, of course, we transferred that to the new model that we began seeing much more socially at the end of the 1900s. And early 2000s, when we saw more and more celebrities taking on younger male partners. And so we had to make that bad and wrong.
It's almost as if, you know, like you said, there's because we can't comprehend it or fit it into a nice little category with a bow on top, it has to be something really ugly and distasteful or perverted because it can't be beautiful, committed, love and partnership. Isn't that interesting? It's just, they're so polarizing.
you know?
I know. There was a recent quote from Emmanuel Macron, the new president of France, whose first couple weeks in office were highlighted only by the fact that his wife was 24 years older. So we have really done a lot in the last 17 years since my book came out to show that they are not toy boys and that it is a choice that some people make. And certainly he doesn't have an agenda. What's his agenda? Is she going to bring him fame and fortune? He's the president of France. I mean, come on. So I think it's very, very interesting that we always want to make something different, bad, wrong, and judge it. And even he said that it is so sad to him that society does not know how to categorize and interpret something so unique and special. So it is not the standard. I am in no way advocating, hey, this is the trend. You must have a young boyfriend, and young guys, you've got to have an old broad. I wouldn't say that in a million years. However, it's a really wonderful fact that as of our time period and our conversation right now, you have, men and women, additional options for love that extend beyond the appropriate age categories that you formerly had. You know, in my time period, women were expected to be with a man same aged but the preference was 5 to 15 years older. Now, for me, they would nearly be in the grave. It's ridiculous, okay? But I know, so I can't even see myself in that reality. But there are a lot of women who are going about their day-to-day business, and some young guy just keeps talking to them. And I promise you, for the women that are in these long-term partnerships, most of the original people that had it happen to them, we were not looking for it, and a young guy kept making himself visible in our world, and we never had it on our radar that he could possibly be interested in us, because we always assume it's about youth and beauty. Well, I get why you'd want the 20-year-old girl. What in the world would you want with a 40-year-old? And this is where the twist takes a wonderful a dive, because younger men that want older women are interested in content and emotional capacity and mental clarity. They love that these women don't play games. They love that they've got a partner that knows who she is. They are willing to accept lines and wrinkles and a few external signs of aging to get quality content and a powerful woman that can make their job as being the male so much easier because, hey, I like this, I don't like that. Very easy. And young girls sometimes don't know how to say that. They're not secure enough to know what their rights are. You know, they just haven't lived long enough.
So in a way, you could put forth the hypothesis or the argument that men in these relationships are actually seeking a healthier experience of relationship.
My research has shown me that the men who do prefer older women have a tendency to go toward content and depth. It's not that they don't notice the pretty young girl, they just don't see themselves mating with her. They can acknowledge she's beautiful, but there is an additional quality that they want that only maturity and clarity can provide. And it's not all younger men who want an older woman. It's not all older women who would be interested in a younger man. But when those two factors combine, it's a beautiful exchange. And listen, it's worked for men for centuries. We never questioned them. How many TV stars? Years ago, my boyfriend was the same age, and he was a trainer to the stars, and Michael Douglas was one of his clients. Awesome, awesome guy. So nice. But nobody would ever say to him, hey, Michael, come on, your wife is 35 years younger. I mean, really? Larry King. I think they're all 30 plus years younger, and then he trades them in, and then they're 40 years younger, whatever. This is common in men of power and status. So I think that the interesting twist is that as women have acquired more money and more status, they have also been able to be more flexible in the type of partner they choose.
Can you explain that more deeply as far as when women acquire more money and power, they are able to have more flexibility in the relationships they choose to engage in?
Yes, doctor. Okay, so historically, we did not have power we couldn't own property. In my own lifetime, I remember black and white television with Walter Cronkite. It was big, big national news that the first woman in history was given a credit card in her own, not her husband's name. So throughout history until the end of the 20th century, a woman's fate and her survival in the world were dependent upon the man that she married. It's as simple as that. She needed him for protection in the world. She needed him for upward mobility. She needed him for safety. She needed him for a lifestyle that she could never, ever have tried to get on her own.
And so now with women in a different position where they do not need the man to get into that, to achieve those things or obtain those, that status or place in life, then she really can actually choose a partner based on other factors.
Exactly. Exactly. And what's so beautiful about this is that now women have real choice.
Right.
If you have, right? It's the first time in history we have real choice. You don't need to have a younger guy, but how wonderful that you can make enough money that you can choose the man you want to be with, not the man you should choose, because he will create a better life for you and the children that you will have in the future. You know, now that you are empowered and you are the determinant of your own financial future, you can align with a man who's your true mate. Because so many women I know, a little older than myself, you know, I saw them in their first marriage. Okay, it was, what do they call it? The dry run or the tester marriage, the trial marriage?
The starter marriage.
Yeah, thank you. The starter marriage. And, you know, they were young and beautiful and they married somebody much older with money. They were a trophy for the man, and the guy was normally either abusive or alcoholic or philandering or whatever. So they come out of that, and they've got some kids. Second marriage. This is not about passion. It's not about love. It's about sacrifice. One more time. Now it's not for society and to please their parents. Now it's a good provider for their kids to give them safety and security and a good home. Again, you know, marriage number two is still not for her. Okay, she's trying to do better. That's still not about love. Then when these women start to go back to work and they can work now, then they find themselves finally at a point where they can choose a partner that's truly resonating for them. And that's when it really gets wonderful.
So it's really, like you said, not only is it just about flexibility in relationship, but it's expansion of possibilities and really engaging in relationships where it is for that's truly aligned with what they need and what they want and not for what this man can provide for them.
Exactly. And when we move out of that stereotype, that barter system, youth and beauty for power and status, right? It's an age-old barter. I mean, and centuries ago, well, even today, some families, it's still about marriage, is almost arranged in that it is for power couples. I mean, Jackie was a socially constructed union between two houses. And a lot of marriages are. I had a friend that wanted me to meet his brother, who was very political in New Jersey, and now at a very high level that I won't mention, but this was a number of years ago. And I knew that the power behind that, you've got a role to play, you know, so you are there helping their future, but you've got to have all the right pedigree yourself. We don't have to do that anymore. And that is the beauty of having our own money, our own power, is that we can now have choice. And how wonderful for the guys as well, that they are able to choose somebody that they want to mate with, somebody that they find intriguing and won't be made fun of with their guy friends. Now it's kind of like hip and fashionable.
You know, I think that for many people who maybe have a difficult time with this type of relationship, you know, they will hear these things and feel like, you know, that women who engage in these relationships are just saying that, you know, that because I think when they hear these things for maybe women who are in the youth, beauty, power, status, bartering relationship, this is actually very threatening and can make them uncomfortable because it just, I think, magnifies perhaps what is lacking in their own more socially acceptable, on the surface, beautiful relationship, if that makes sense.
See, I don't understand that, but my harshest critics were women. I mean,
of course.
Believe it or not, it's horrible, right? I don't know why it would make people, it doesn't involve them. I don't know why it makes them feel so threatened.
Yeah. As you were describing this, it made me think of an episode that we had. I think it was episode, it was in the 30s. I'll have to go back and check which one it was. But it was with Tamara Powell. And she is a psychotherapist in Pensacola, Florida. And she works with individuals who, among other things, are in non-traditional relationships.
Oh, wonderful.
You know, so a lot of open marriages, polyamory, and just all kinds of configurations of people who have decided to commit and partner with each other. And we talked about how we as human beings actually need and crave different types of relationships. And one of the things that we talked about was how in our English language, we have one word to kind of capture love, and that's the word love, just love. Mm-hmm. And in the Greek language, the ancient Greek language, there were, I think, I'm going off the top of my head, at least five different words. There was the word eros, which was for erotic love. And then there was another word for familial love. Another word was for a brotherly love. And they had...
Yeah, filios, amine, all those things. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, but they said it's just so interesting that for a word that really cannot be limited or defined or put in a box, that we have, so we only have one word to capture
even in
it.
Even in Spain, there are lots of different versions that there are different words that signify love, but that's also qualify that other aspect. Is it like a friendly love or a sexy love?
Yeah. So I think that's interesting because I feel that this relationship that you're describing between an older woman and a younger man also is a relationship that meets different types of needs.
You know, it's funny, and I do understand how people misunderstand this, but the reason they misunderstand it is really interesting to me. I believe that no matter how far we've come in history, a woman's worth is still tied to her youth and beauty. And when you think about it, if that were not the case, this would never be a discussion. It's only because our worth is still tied to our youth and beauty that anyone would even question why somebody would choose to love us.
Yeah, when you said that, that just gave me shivers because it is a true statement, sad but true, that is really the ultimate determination in our society of a woman's value.
The you know, whenever I was going to do a TV show, once they found out that they had my boyfriend, because he was really kind, you know, he'd be photographed, he'd answer questions, he'd fly out with me, but then they didn't want to see me. Then they wanted to fly him to California. They would ask him the same thing, what do you see in her? And he said, well, have you seen her? She's gorgeous. And they said, no, but really, she's going to get old. What have you seen in her? And he said, look, I'm nearly balding and I'm barely 31, so I kind of know what she's going to look like older. But they kept asking him, what do you see in her? And that meant, we don't get it. Okay, she's nice looking, but dude, she's older. What do you see? Is it that it's the sex is great? Are you in an S&M relationship? Does she pay your bills? They're looking for something else that they can understand, that what is the payoff, because she's obviously older and she's going to continue to get older. So she doesn't have youth and beauty. Even if she's got beauty, you know, the edges of the rose are turning brown. So it's only a matter of time. And why would you want her? And this means that no matter how accomplished we are, whether we run a company with thousands of employees, we've been a president or a prime minister of a country, still, society wants to know who would want us if we're not young and pretty. That concept of wanting, that a woman's worth is really, that's what it is. Now, I get it. Centuries upon centuries are hard to erase. In 50 years. I do understand that. It's a hangover from where we came as women. And it will take a while to get rid of it. But the older women, younger men issue, I feel, is one of a woman's worth. It's not about the fact that young guys want her. It is about the fact that a woman is entering a forbidden territory, which is that she is becoming an entire human being that has value in and of herself. And that's the part that we're not comfortable with.
Thank you for making that delineation, because I think that is so important. And, you know, I think that's also, this also speaks to the larger picture behind this conversation. It's not simply about, you know, what you see, which is a relationship between, you know, an older woman, a younger man, but there are all these other cultural and societal and collective issues that are actually beneath the surface, triggering reactions.
Well, the same thing happens. Have you ever seen a really good-looking guy with a patently unattractive woman or even a morbidly obese woman? And the first thing you're thinking is, what happened? Okay, he's stuck with her. She's the mother of his children. She's the one with the money. You find your head going through that. Mm. I've been poisoned with the same thing that they told everybody else. The only thing is I'm aware of it and I catch it and I'm like, Susan, why are you saying that? There are guys that like that. You know this. And I think there was a TV show on gigolos on either Showtime or HBO, and one of the guys liked really ample women. And so the other guys who are gigolos, paid for sex, right, are looking at this photo and they're like, dude, you can't go visit this girl. She's like, she's a man. She's huge. And he's like, no, she looks good. And they're like, oh, dude, what's wrong with you? You're a sick guy. You work out in the gym. You're ripped. He goes, I love this. I love this. So you see, what people find interesting physically, we'll never understand. But the real issue that really upsets people is that society is having a hard time adjusting to the totality of a woman's worth. Trust me, or we would never, ever have this question come up.
So, Susan, I want to shift gears a little bit because I was so excited when we started our conversation that we just jumped right in.
Okay. All right.
And I wanted to, you know, kind of go back to what is usually a question I ask kind of at the beginning, and that is, you know, why did you write this book? What drew you into this area?
I was a respectable, socially respectable woman who was doing broadcast news for the channel that we now know as CNBC. I had a show on Financial News Network, and I had skirts down to my mid-thigh, and my mid-calf, I should say, and down, and, you know, collars up to my earlobes and little bob haircut, and I left the crime of New York in the 80s, and I built a home in a country and horsey area on a golf course in northwestern New Jersey. I moved out there as a single woman and kind of quit working. I'd made a ton of money in New York. I was good to go. So here I am, late 30s, and single in an area that is so rural. And the selection of men, I mean, any guy with ambition had left. Right. And so, no, it's true. Okay. It was not on a train route. It was not on a bus route. It was the radius. But, you know, I was looking for absolute opposite of New York. But it never occurred to me that I would do anything more than stay there on the weekends. So I didn't look for a vibrant social life. I didn't look for intellectual communities. I didn't look for restaurants that stay open past 8 o'clock. I didn't look for any of this. But then when I moved there full time, I found myself going to a hardcore little gym, which was cool. That was awesome. And there I kept seeing this beautiful young guy, and I kept seeing him all the time. I thought he was like 26. I was about 36 when I moved out there. I had a relationship with a man 16 years younger, not a problem. The mother was a little bit questioning it, but he was well-bred. The parents were intelligent, and they realized that they were sane enough to have a conversation with me. You know, and the mom basically wanted to know, I love my child. Are you going to hurt him? Because I'll have to hurt you. And I'm like, no, this is fine. And I talked to her, and she, you know, I was very close to them. And when that relationship ended, because I eclipsed him, actually, I needed him to go out into the world on his own. He was a little too dependent upon me. I was single, trying to date in Manhattan, living in this rural community in New Jersey. And yet every time I'd go to my gym, this beautiful, blonde, tall, gorgeous creature would show up and chat away. And we were doing conversations on spirituality. I was reading this huge book by Ernest Holmes and The Science of Mind, and it's like 5 inches thick.
Oh my gosh.
Stairmaster. Do you know the book?
I know the book.
Yeah. So that was the day of the Stairmaster, right? And
right.
Jane Fonda and our little G-strings up our butt. And so he'd come in and take a look. And I kept thinking, this kid is always here when I'm here. How interesting is that? And we talk about him dating, and I'd give him advice. And so I always saw him at this gym. And, you know, I couldn't help but notice he was just spectacularly beautiful. He just make you stop. As a matter of fact, when he would walk into a room, it wasn't that they just stare. You could hear the people held their breath. He was so beautiful. So, of course, didn't have an effect upon me at all. But all I'm saying is, you know, after a year of knowing him, we went to our first date, which we discovered in the car was a date. I drove him to Morristown, New Jersey, to a spiritual church that was the first church of religious science. So it was like the positive thinking. And we went to, you know, something that was what we used to read in the book together. And then we looked at each other and I thought, wow, I know I'm going to suffer for this one. Somehow, Dr. Viotto, I could feel that I was walking through the door of something pulling me, and yet I knew that I would be tested by fire. And of course, I went trotting through because he was gorgeous. That's what happened.
Wow.
So that relationship with that young man, he had flipped from 18 to 19. I had flipped from 39 to 40. So you can imagine, in a rural community with people that did not have big city thinking, didn't have any kind of evolved thinking where, you know, everything is as it should be, and if it's not, it's bad and wrong. I was absolutely persecuted on a level that if I tell you the stories, you would really think I'm making it up. And so that's when I actually got to test my faith. You know, you read these positive things and it's like, yeah, that's so nice. Okay, but when push comes to shove and you have a crisis, do you really have faith to get you through that? And the day-to-day living was so impossible with the hatred and the phone calls and the mail and the comments and how people treated me out in public. Just going to buy groceries was emotionally draining because the gossip had spread that I was a witch and a prostitute and a lesbian.
Oh,
I was
goodness.
All three. Long story to get here, but that's how the book evolved, because I started to realize, oh my God, I am being so persecuted for this. This, I have to change social consciousness. I thought, what if somebody else is going through this? I mean, this is not normal. The vindictiveness and the hatred were beyond belief. And I realized that this small community finally had their scapegoat.
Yes.
And I didn't think I could handle it. But I couldn't handle it until I realized I was fighting for more than myself. I started researching different couples, and everybody came out of the woodwork. When we started to write this book, my co-author had the idea, and I wrote down the chapter titles in 5 minutes on her kitchen table. And she said, okay, write chapter 1 and 2. Here's the titles you gave me. And I said, okay, went home, wrote by hand, gave them to her. She printed them. She typed them up on an old-fashioned typewriter. She said, give me the next 2. And I just wrote. She translated, she could read my writing. She edited out things that she didn't like too much. Oh, it's so painful. And we didn't tell our story. In that book, I did not tell my story. I told my story in the second book, Allowing Magnificence, but I didn't tell it there. We were just the researchers. Actually got a contract, fired a couple agents along the way that didn't feel right, and then everything took off.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was filled with shame, and they were really hysterical about nobody would come forward to the press. So here I have 200 interviews, 200 couples. Not one will come forward to the press. So I knew I was telling the truth. The editor knew I was telling the truth, but we couldn't get one to come through with a false name. Nobody would talk. They were so ashamed. They were so terrified that they'd be found out, you know. And so that's the difference. Now it's a point of pride. It's a point of pride for a young guy to have caught a big game, like an older woman who's powerful. It's a point of pride for an older woman to have the love of a younger man, but then it was considered shameful.
So what would you say are the lessons that we can learn from these relationships?
We cannot judge why anybody is there. And if you pay attention to your mind, the first couple assumptions that will come up have been pre-programmed by your world. They're not yours. And it's always good to notice that automatic feed that's going on, because that's where all of the insanity lies, right? So we do not know what happens behind closed doors. We do not know the relationship they have. And when we don't understand it, we like to give it a simplistic answer. So reserve your judgment. It might just be that no matter how weird it looks, they love each other. Or maybe they don't, and it's perverted as it can be, but the possibility exists it could be love. And also understand that we're living in a world that's changing. And this is the good news, bad news, but in this time period where the rubble is settling right now, we are going to find a lot of new evolved formats of partnership, things that make us uncomfortable, triads, open relationships. We are going to worry that maybe our mate's going to want to have an open relationship, or maybe that, you know, they will never find somebody that wants to commit because now they don't have to, or that they'll want polyamory. And again, all we want to do is put some of these options on the menu as valid. You don't have to want them. You don't have to be with somebody that wants them. You can want one-on-one, man-on-woman, traditional as it comes. You can want that. But I think we should have the right to have an expanded menu so that if your life changes, if you change, that instead of feeling guilt and shame, you can actually walk in your authenticity and have the kind of love that reflects the person that you are on the inside.
You know, Susan, you are so inspiring, and, you know, your message, your words, it's really, you know, I was thinking this during our interview, just so revolutionary, but revolutionary in its tearing down walls and assumptions and really opening the doors, opening our minds to more possibility. And if we can open our minds and allow for these differences and different, I guess, the different ways of loving and connecting, really, it's a benefit to all of us. You know, there's just, like you said, there's more possibility.
Right. So many times I will meet a very attractive, very wealthy 50-something-year-old guy who's gone through several marriages, and just women are littered in his wake because the guy cannot be faithful. And he is never going to be faithful until he's too old to have the energy to be faithful. And really, and I'm saying, and it's like fidelity is not his trip. Now, I come across men like that. And so society would say they're broken, they need to go to therapy. And I'd say, well, that depends. They should go to therapy to find out if they are inherently desirous of other people and then get real with that. And if it's another issue, it's a power trip because sex is never just about sex, then they need to figure out where they're really coming from and what's holding them back from having a committed relationship that could make them happy and how they would structure it. But the point of all these new models is simply to give all of us an opportunity to love and participate in a way that is authentic for us. And the traditional carbon copy, the cutout model, you know, one man, one woman, 2.5 kids and picket fence, that was beautiful and idyllic in the 50s, although it didn't include the entire story of America. And I think when we can get honest with ourselves, we may indeed want the traditional model, but we may also want the traditional model and a couple of tweaks. And that is how we're, right? And then that's yes. How we're going to make our love last.
Yeah.
I did an article called Marriage a la Carte, and I'm a big one for marriage a la carte. Just because you're getting married, everyone I know that gets married in the modern world goes, yeah, but we're not going to get married like other people. And it's like, you don't have to qualify it. It's okay. It's okay. You know, but so that's the challenge with modern couples. How do we live in this time period that gives you so many options and yet grow along with our partner and truly authentically be in the relationship that makes us happy? These are fringe kind of niche relationships. They're not for everyone. But for those people that are going to do it, you need to have some people out there that have walked the walk and can guide you. And those books did not exist. When I wrote mine, I wrote the book I wished I'd had because it didn't exist. And I didn't even know how to use a computer. I wrote by hand. How pathetic is that? So I didn't even know how to do a Google search. Maybe there were a couple of other books. There were some books and they didn't make it, maybe because the women weren't as passionate. Maybe they lived in the wrong city and they didn't gain the same traction. But it was pretty amazing that the power of one's intention can be so pure, so purely focused, that it's no longer about you. Now you're fighting for people you've never met, but you know what they're in. And then I believe the universe opens up and gives you power like you have never known in your life. And the cool thing is, it's not about you, so you don't have an ego about it. It's just like, thank you for letting me do what I came here to do. Thank you. Thank you for giving me a voice. Thank you for letting me change social consciousness.
You know, Susan, that's just, I'm so moved by what you shared, because I do think that, you know, when we come from a place of pure intention and thinking of how can I serve, how can I be a voice, what can I create,
yeah,
you know, for the good of humanity, it's really a different experience that can really propel you, move you forward. And it's, again, like you said, it's not about you anymore. It's bigger than that.
It is an amazing thing how our own crisis, if we utilize it properly, you know, that's the alchemy. That's the one piece of metaphysics that got me through this.
Yeah.
I had a very strong feeling that either the universe was unjust, which I thought for a while, the universe is unjust, I'm being victimized, poor me, why do they hate me? I'm such a nice person. His life is so much better with me. I'm not mean. And it so hurt me. I'm like, I'm all alone in my dream house. I threw all my money into this house and I don't even want to be here. I don't want to leave the house. And then I thought, God, what am I going to do with this? And somehow I kind of felt like the blessing was in the chaos, if I could just get it out. And then whimsical, off-the-cuff comment from a woman who was a friend who I could not believe. She said, let's write a book. We should write a book about young guys. I'm like, do you know about young guys? I mean, come on. She said, no, I've dated them. And I'm like, girl, you don't try and deal with her family. That's something else, right?
Yeah.
So I thought I did it like a lark. I never thought anything was going to happen. Then you see how the universe has conspired to put this together for you. I had wished perhaps that it could have been that I cured cancer, right? Or that I came up with the first, I don't know, something that was fantastic for the world. This was my claim to fame. I guess this was one of my tasks. I don't remember asking for it. And you got to have a good sense of humor about it. But out of all the careers I've had in my life, this is what people know me for. And you know what? All I know is I did the best with what I had. And it changed. My pain changed it for others. And you know, if we can do that, that's alchemy. That's how we transmute this horrible thing into a positive thing. You think of the mother who started mad,
yeah,
right? Daughter killed. Okay, what are you going to do with all that pain? What are you going to do with all that anger? Okay, you do something that helps millions of others.
Yeah.
And so that's our key. You know, wherever our calling is, I believe somebody's soul purpose is oftentimes born of these exact moments.
Susan, what is the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you, to learn more about your work?
I'd love you to come to my website, susanwinter.net, and come to my YouTube page, because I'm mostly active there. I talk to my audience. There's such amazing, amazing people. I'm listed under Susan E. Winter. But if you pretty much do a Google search of Susan Winter, I should come up on the first page, most of the first page, which is awesome. So check out my Facebook page, check out my videos. I know people like to consume those rather than read articles.
Also, Susan, do you provide any type of one-on-one support or consulting?
I do.
Could you talk about that, please?
Sure. I have an intensive that I do that's 5 hours, and it's normally in person, but I break it up and do it on the phone sometimes or via Skype. And it's for somebody that, like, by hour two, whatever you thought was wrong with you is probably right with you. I have seen the most incredible transformation. And I think in part that's because people are so committed to that process that we just wipe out 2 years of working it slowly. Now, that's one. It's the intensive package. It's called A Day with Susan. Then I have my individual coaching, which is awesome. And people, I have clients from all over the world, everything from Dubai to Singapore to Mumbai. I get weird time zones, you know, 9.5 hours difference. I mean, those are things to really compute. Then I have a group party, which is a lot of fun. I do it via Skype. And there are times you're going to be with a bunch of guy friends or your female friends or a mixed crowd, and you want to have a night, you want to kick back, have some wine, whatever, have some drinks, and ask me anything you want to know about dating and relationships. It's relaxed, it's fun, it's a lot of laughter. And the cool thing is that you, as the host, invite as many people as you want. I suggest no more than 10. And they can do it via Skype from another location, or they can be in a room with you. And we just have a party. We chit-chat.
How fun.
That's a lot of fun. Because you get really solid information, but everybody gets a chance to ask a question. And the price the more people you have, it's like nothing per person. So it's a lot of fun.
Thank you so much, Susan. You are doing such important, meaningful work in the world and effecting change. And you said a quote in our first conversation, you know, for our listeners, this is round two for me and Susan, but you said something in our first conversation and you said relationships should be evolutionary. And
absolutely.
That just stuck with me. And I really feel that, you know, you are the emissary of this revolution in how you inspire, support, and, you know, help others to move through these experiences and to also for those who aren't in them to understand and to broaden their ideas and limiting beliefs.
I truly believe that if we want a relationship to survive in this time period, we have to factor growth into it from the start. And that's what traditional relationships did not do. So we have to, you know, growth is moving forward. And you're absolutely right about that. And I by the way, I love your show. I love talking to you. You are so kind and so thoughtful. And you have some terrific guests, really.
Thanks so much, Susan. I'm grateful for your time again today. And I know that this episode is going to resonate with so many. And just thank you again with all my heart.
Thank you, Dr. Viotto. My pleasure.
Wow, what an incredible conversation. Susan is truly gifted in communicating her deep insights on human behavior and relationships in a way that really has the power to shift consciousness. One of the things that stood out for me was Susan's explanation of why younger men seek out older women. Another aspect that stood out for me are the qualities that older women bring to relationships that younger women do not. I also loved how Susan shared the cultural, societal, generational, and collective assumptions that get in the way of people understanding the relationship between older women and younger men. For show notes to today's episode and links to the resources mentioned, please visit www.lourdesviotto.com/women-in-depth. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe on iTunes or share with a friend. Again, thank you so much for listening and see you next time.